My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
So you're still in Michigan. You haven't gone on vacation yet.
Oh, no, that's not until next month.
Oh, okay. I thought you were leaving for Thanksgiving as well.
Nope. Other one.
Gotcha. Very well. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
That's kind of a personal question.
There you go. And Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
They're going to render my fat to make candles.
Very well.
That was a better answer.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
That was my favorite line in this whole movie. I just couldn't stop laughing.
Oh,
we'll get into that in a moment. But before we do that, for folks who are new to the podcast and who we are, we basically discuss horror films, sci-fi, fantasy thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, midnight movies, drive-in films, and the like. So basically, we try to critique and review and talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Now, Eric, we do have a webpage, I believe, right? And there's some stuff there?
Yes, you're the one that runs it. It is at darkdiscussions.com. On that page, you can find multitudes of interesting material. On the right-hand side of the front page, you will find links to friends of the show. And then up top, you'll find links to other sections of the website, including an articles section where you can read articles written by myself as well as other folks. There's an audio section where you can find every single episode of the Dark Discussions podcast, as well as any of its spinoffs, available to download for free. There's got to be something there you want to listen to, so check it out. Then on the front page in the middle, there's a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you financially support your online artists, like podcasters. Producing this podcast is not free. So if you would like to help us offset the cost of producing the show, you can donate. For every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them randomly on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
Excellent. Very well. Very well. So folks who are interested in contacting us, you can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, and you can give us your feedback or your suggestions or your reviews of the on the films that we have discussed, or just films in general that you've seen, classics or hidden gems that you want to give a little review on, and we will read it on the podcast. Also, there's a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And you can join there where people are discussing many topics such as things in the news like the potential of a werewolf, the London werewolf, whatever that.
An American werewolf in London.
Thank you. Yeah. So that this is possibly going to be a TV series. People are talking about that. People are talking about the Joker still. A lot of good stuff.
That's you, Phil. You're still talking about the Joker.
No, there was news that broke yesterday that they're.
Go ahead, Mike.
Nobody said that in the way that they're going to make a sequel and other similar films, and then they said no, they're not, and then they said yes, they are.
Okay,
and that was the extent of that conversation.
So we know exactly what we did before, which is nothing.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. All right. So those are some information that you can do. And as Eric said, besides the links to Friends of the Podcast at the bottom of every page are links to the email and the Facebook group, among other things such as Twitter and whatnot. So I think we can probably get into our topic tonight. And before we do, one thing, which is this is November 21st, 2019 that we are recording, which is a Thursday night. All right. Let's begin. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to be discussing the 2019 movie starring Rebecca Romijn and Hayley Griffith called Satanic Panic.
I took this job for the tips. 4 hours, my total earnings are an expired Applebee's coupon. A sweater that smells like racism.
It's exactly your style.
Oh.
Deliver for meal basement.
It's outside our zone.
I'll do it.
Are you ready to make an investment in your future?
Yes!
Are you ready to take back what you are owed?
Yes!
Are you ready to fully commit yourself to Satan?
Yes!
Who are you? I'm the pizza guy. A girl?
Are you by any chance a virgin?
That's a very personal question.
She's a virgin. Whose power unlocks our true potential?
Hail Satan!
Do you have any idea what's happening here tonight?
Hail Satan!
They are summoning Baphomet, the big demon from hell. And when that clock strikes 12, he is going to rip you open.
Where's my virgin?
I don't know what's happening. My mom and her butt buddies are booty calling Baphomet.
Hail Satan!
And they're not going to stop until you're strapped to a barbed wire altar. That's bonkers.
Any idea why the rich stay rich? And you stay screwed?
Better health care.
Hail Satan!
They are stronger than us.
Virgin, no sacrifice. Let me protect you.
Oh, how are you people?
Death to the weak, wealth to the strong.
Hail Satan!
Stop drinking. You really want to face this over?
Get that mean lady! I'm sorry!
That's right. Satanic Panic is a 2019 film. It's a horror film, but more in the black comedy or comedy horror film. Directed by Chelsea Stardust.
Which we know that Phil doesn't like.
Right, I usually do not, yep. Directed by Chelsea Stardust, who's a first-time feature director. However, she used to work for Blumhouse, and she was brought in by this company after interviewing a number of potential directors for the film.
She has purple hair.
She sure does. She sure does. Ted Gagan, who wrote one of Eric's favorite films, We Are Still Here. He was the creator of the story and the guy that started the whole thing rolling. He and another guy named Grady Hendrix put it together, and then Grady Hendrix wrote the screenplay. The film is directed by Chelsea Stardust, as we said, but produced by three folk, Dallas Saunier, Adam Goldworm, and Amanda Presmrick. All these folks have been interviewed on the Blu-ray, which I actually have, starring Hayley Griffith in one of her probably first major or starring role. But the film has a huge cast of others, basically starring Rebecca Romijn, Ruby Modine, who was brought in from Blumhouse. She starred in Happy Death Day. And as I said, the connection, Chelsea Stardust actually brought her in specifically because she was knew she was good for actress. A.J. Bowen had a small role, Jordan Ladd, Arden Marin, and Jerry O'Connell, among others. The film was actually produced by Fangoria. I guess it's magazine, but they're kind of half in print and a web type thing. RLJE Films is the distributor, and it was released everywhere on September 6, 2019. However, it was at festivals prior to that. And it is getting approximately 63% or so on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's considered fresh, though, on the lower end. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So we'll start with you, Eric, because I know you were the first person to see this film.
I was. I just was scrolling through new editions to digital rentals and saw the cover art. The cover art for this movie is pretty cool. It's the upside down pentagram with the pictures of all the stars. And when I say pictures, they're drawn. And then it has Satanic Panic. Looks like it's written in blood. So that caught my eye. And I decided to check it out.
So what else is on the cover? Bunnies.
Are there really?
There's a bunny.
I missed the bunny. Oh, there's one, you're right. There's a bunny.
There's one fuzzy bunny.
There's one fuzzy bunny.
Yeah, you're right. There is. Yeah. And we'll get into why there's a bunny and only one bunny on the cover.
Poor bunny. Don't worry. By the time this video gets released to Walmart, this work will all be changed and there'll be Photoshopped floating heads to fit in with all the other DVD covers out there.
Well, they did actually change the cover for Walmart, but that's another story. They changed it for Walmart, so it just says Panic. Because they don't want the word satanic in their store.
Is that really true?
That's really true, yes.
To all their stores or just like the ones in Alabama?
As far as I know, it's all the stores.
What are you implying about Alabama, Mike? That's fine. I've been there twice, and the people are really good folk. Really good folk.
Oh, let's not start this.
They have less of a sense of humor about these things.
That's a fair point, Mike. Well explained. That's fair. So, Eric, you were the first person to watch it. You scrolled through. You thought the cover art was good. I'm sure you checked the cast, and then you watched the film, and what do you think of it?
Well, I'll tell you what. First time I watched it, I was meh. You know, I thought it was okay. Because I watched it initially pretty shortly after we saw Ready or Not. And in comparison to that movie, I think Ready or Not is the superior movie. So I was a little let down when I watched it the first time, but I watched it again tonight, after a little distance and without the very direct comparison, it stands up a little better on its own. So it's a decent horror comedy. You know, it's not going to be one of my favorite of all time, but I liked it. I had fun. It was fine.
All right. Very well. Very well. Let's go on to Mike.
I don't know. I heard about it because internets. And then someone, I can't remember who, watched it and was getting really annoying about how great it was and wouldn't stop talking about it. And then forced us to watch it for tonight. And so I watched it last night. And
to be fair, by Phil's standards, he was restrained in his approach.
That is true. Yes. And at first I was kind of like, this is going to be a long night, because this is a relatively low budget film. I don't know what the actual budget for it is. Because obviously to have some of the actors and the effects they did, this isn't something that was filmed for $3,000 in somebody's basement. And actually given the houses, if that was somebody's basement, that they had the money to spend on it anyway. But it's still, has hallmarks in terms of production quality of a low budget film, generally speaking. And so I think it gets off to a little bit of a rough start. But it does kind of pick up pretty quickly. And then by the time I think I'm probably good 30 minutes in, really found myself enjoying it. There's a lot of good lines of dialogue and lines of coke, for that matter. And yeah, I would give this a solid recommend if you're looking for a good horror comedy. I would highly recommend this movie.
All right, very well. Yeah, for me, I actually I think I heard about it from our friend at another podcast, Bloody Bits in the Horrorphilia Network, Jason Lloyd, as a matter of fact. He's really into watching everything and anything, and he's a big fan of horror comedies. And I usually take his word. He's been off a couple of times, but generally he's usually pretty legit when he gives his ratings. And so he said it was pretty good. So I said, yeah, I'm going to check it out. So I actually pre-ordered the Blu-ray and didn't bother watching it for a long time after I did finally receive it, even though Eric had watched it and Jason had watched it. And then this week, last week, I watched a handful of brand new 2019 films intentionally, because as Mike, you mentioned in a prior episode, I think maybe it was last week, that you were about to ramp up for your post-Thanksgiving horror film watch, because as we know, this has been a weak year. So I'm kind of doing the same thing. This is my first year ever, I think, that I'm going to be doing the exact same thing you as Mike, because there hasn't been many horror films that I've really seen this year, which is kind of odd doing a podcast.
I've just been kind of burnt out on it's kind of made it hard to get into it. I'm just saying the ones that I have seen generally haven't knocked me off my socks. Knocked me off my feet. Or knocked my socks off
is what you're going
for. Or knocked me off my feet. It's got to be one of the two. But yeah, regardless, my feet and socks are still firmly connected. So, you know, it's not that there's been a whole lot of horrible. You know, there have not been terrible things like, oh, I don't know, The Gallows. Let's go to our old standby. But there has been The Gallows, too. That maybe should have been a warning sign.
yes. I know Jason Lloyd
Which
has seen
I have
that
not
one.
Watched.
Yeah, Jason Lloyd has seen that one. It went straight to VOD, but I don't think it's released yet, but he got a screener, and he has not given me a rating, and I haven't bothered asking him about it. But that's a fair point. So I finally decided to watch a handful of films, and so far, they've all been pretty solid films, and this happened to be one of them, Satanic Panic. As Mike jokingly said, or it was you, Eric, jokingly said earlier, whether it was during this episode or right before we started, I'm not usually a big fan of horror comedies. And yet this one actually was I tickled my funny bone. It was in the vein of Zombievers and things of that nature, and in that film I thought was fantastic. So I was a big fan of this film. I had a great time. I watched it a second time last night just to get ready for this episode, once we decided we were going to do it. And still good stuff. A lot of things I missed in the first time run, I noticed in this one. So I would definitely give it a big thumbs up, and this will be on my top 20 list for sure at the end of the year. Not sure where, but it's definitely a good flick. Chrissy.
Well, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, just because the title was kind of, you know, very campy. I think it's the strong points for me of this were I loved the fact that it did not really apologize for being campy. Like, in other words, it did not try to be anything it wasn't. It's just what it was. I did think the strongest element of this was actually the dialogue. The dialogue was actually the strongest part. I thought it was very sharp. It was funny. I mean, it's very difficult to get me to laugh, like to really belly laugh. And some of the lines in this movie really had me doing that. So that I appreciated. I do understand that it was a cheeky, like, fun movie, but I had some major, like, story issues with it that were just like, okay, whatever. But like I said,
there were some two beats.
No, oh, don't make fun of me. No, what I'm saying
there
is,
there was a two beat. I was waiting for the third beat. It never came.
It never came. There was a problem in that there was no. And I understand not every movie is going to do as well. Do you know what I mean? But like the whole, there was this whole section that where all this information just came out of nowhere. And I was kind of like, all right, we really needed some kind of hint of that just to have this make sense. They may have tried to play it for the over the top drama queen humor factor, but it really did not work, I don't think. So while they might have done that on purpose, I just think it fell flat. But other than that, I mean, I enjoyed the ending. I'm not going to say it's a bad film, but I definitely think it's for certain people. I really honestly was kind of bored with it. About halfway through, I just kind of was like, well, okay, I have some envelopes to stuff, so I'm just going to leave this on and listen to it while I stuff envelopes. You know, it didn't really hold my attention. But I mean, I think the premise is cool. I enjoyed the camp and I thought the dialogue was really kind of funny.
All right. Very well. So, that's our initial opinions on the film. And I think we do have, something of note, which is a wiki, Eric, a wiki.
Wiki. Oh yeah. And by the way, one of the characters in the movie, she's a witch! All right. So, wiki. A pizza delivery girl at the end of her financial rope has to fight for her life and her tips when her last order of the night turns out to be a high society, high society Satanist in need of a virgin sacrifice.
All right. That sounds appropriate.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, so just a couple of things like my add-on to that would be basically our pizza girl. It's first day on the job. Her name is Sam or Samantha, and she is doing this just to pay the bills because her real dream is to be a folk singer and whatnot. So a YouTube type folk singer, and then maybe go somewhere from there. That's pretty much the setup of her character. Before we get into spoilers and throwing up the spoiler flag and all that, because as folks know, Dark Discussions does not only review, but we do critique, find things, like Chrissy's especially finds hidden messages, symbolism, all that stuff we talk about. So we do have a spoiler section and we do spoil the films. But before we do get into that, is there any things that anybody wanted to bring up prior to that, just generally on the characters, the film or whatnot, that wouldn't be considered spoilers? For me, I actually thought she was a pretty good singer. I like that song that she plays on the YouTube on the phone.
I really? Good. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, her voice is fine. I didn't care for the song.
Well, it's not your genre. You're more into the classic rock, heavy metal, right? I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think that song was actually supposed to be super tongue in cheek too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they did a lot of like ridiculous fun. Like that was one of the things about this movie that I did appreciate.
There was a lot of ridiculous fun in this movie.
Yeah, there was. There was just stuff where you're just like, oh, holy shit, that's really ridiculous. It was kind of fun.
Now the two pizza boys that she's showing the video to, in my opinion, are complete losers because they're laughing at her and yet they both want to basically probably date her. And so it's laughing at her isn't going to work.
Dating was what you thought they had in mind?
Well, get in her pants, okay?
There you go.
Either way, laughing at her isn't going to work. So these people are stupid.
One of them is a grown-ass man delivering pizzas.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Mike.
Well, no, but I don't get the sense that he was someone who had a office job somewhere who's down on his luck. you know, and lost his job or something. It just, I think this is his, you know, his peak in life.
Right. Let's be clear. The fact that you deliver pizza does not make you a loser, but these losers are delivering pizza.
Right. That's and that was my point, especially if they're laughing at somebody that they're trying to get into the pants of.
Yeah, so, that's generally not an approach that works out well.
Right, exactly. Now, what else? I did do some research on the film, you know, reviews and all that after watching it. And even though it is a horror comedy, some folks in their reviews said that basically, though it's a horror comedy, this is a very good film on the haves and the have-nots. Would anybody here?
That's in there. Yeah. I thought it was fairly obvious.
Yeah, I think so as well. And the thing is that even though Sam is quote unquote one of the have nots, I don't think it's because she could not become one of the haves. It's just that she's choosing a profession, which is a folk singer, that obviously isn't a good job to be doing.
She's early in life. Not many people that age have made it yet. It takes a while.
Right, yeah. That's why you should always have a day job. Right? I mean, Chrissy, you know what I'm talking about, right? There's a lot of authors that we know out there on Facebook that we're friends with that a lot of them are struggling big time. And oddly, I've always just scratched my head saying, why are they not having a day job and write at night like or weekends like you do, for example, Chrissy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's sometimes oddly or unfortunately chosen, I guess, too, not just because of bad luck. But in this case, I think, like you said, Eric, it's more that she's just a young one and she still has time to, you know, set a career or a goal or whatnot. And maybe she will become a future folk singer superhero. Don't know.
Well, we gotta get some spoilers. There are some things I really liked about this movie, but I don't want to spoil anything because like I think it would be fun going into this movie blind.
I went in completely blind. I mean, I knew there was a girl that delivered pizza, but that's all I know. All right, so before we throw that out, anything else anybody wanted to bring up that wouldn't be considered spoilers or really into the plot that is general information? Anything? Anyone?
Just that Rebecca Romijn is a better actress than I remember.
Yeah, she's really good. And not only is she a good actress, but she's a good comedian.
Yeah. Yeah, she had some very funny parts.
She might have been my favorite part of the film. I don't know why. I just enjoyed kind of watching her. I actually really enjoyed all the antics of the cultists.
Yes.
Probably more so than I enjoyed the antics of Sam and Judy.
Mm-hmm.
Judy. Yep.
Which is not a knock necessarily on Sam and Judy. It just I preferred the cultists.
Right. Well, the thing is, it's a weird film in a sense because the cultists throughout are just like comedic. The whole scenes with them are all you know. Nod and wink at the audience, while the Sam and Judy scenes are generally that way. But there's a few times, even when they're winking and trying to make us laugh, they change tone a little bit a few times, and it felt a bit off, kind of sort of. Though it does develop their characters more. But again, if you're already in the mode of thinking this is a horror comedy, when we do have those moments, it could be considered slowing it down a bit. While when we see the cultists, it's never slow at all. It's just always over the top hilarious. At least that's what I think. I don't know. What do you think, Mike? Because you brought that up, your opinion of why you thought the cultists were more quote unquote fun than Sam and Judy. Again, like you said, not that you're putting the Sam and Judy story down at all, but
well, I think there's a, in order to get the story going, you have to treat Sam's story with some seriousness. in order for the audience to buy into what's going on, right? You have to buy the legitimacy of the threat or that she feels threatened, I'm guessing. And they're just able to have a little bit more fun with this group of Satanists who are all looking out kind of for themselves. And there's a lot of, first of all, there's a lot of juxtaposition of, you know, the anomaly white class, upper class, white collar, upper class people who are doing these, you know, outrageous things. And at the same time, you know, so there's that. And then there's all this like backbiting. Some of the characters are just there for a comedic note. Like, who was the one character? Was it Danielle?
Danielle, who's like, shrug.
Right, she, that's like, pretty shrugs. Much her line of dialogue.
Whose side are you on? And she just shrugs. Like, I thought she was hilarious because she just, like, was a wasted space.
Did she even say a single word?
I don't think she did.
No.
I
don't
know. She didn't. And that's kind of what she cracked me up. Because every time they looked at her or tried to turn to her or something, she would just be like, I don't know. It was just funny.
Right. But yeah, because everybody would always look to her as if whatever her opinion would be would determine the correct thing. But she's like, just shrugs every time. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I know. It's really fun. It was
right,
funny.
And I guess it's right. So the other character, the Judy and Sam have to be developed as characters. I think this is where I'm getting at. And these are because there's a large bunch of these characters. They can be just whatever they need them to be for the moment for the joke. Sort of like the, you know, a character out of Airplane, you know, whose only job is to the woman who speaks jive or whatever it is. You know, it's and so you could just have a little bit more fun and be a little bit more playful with them than you can be with the leads who really actually have to carry the story.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. Absolutely. Yeah, and I would agree with that. Yep. And just being cultists, I mean, you know, the whole thing of being cultists, especially wealthy ones, is just, you know, laughable in itself. Never mind.
Except for the fact that it's real.
There you go. That's right. We've seen it in many films, Eric. The Omen.
Documentaries.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What was it? Mike, the 12th victim or the 6th victim or the 13th victim? I forget what it's called. I have
no idea what you're talking about.
The same producer that did Cat People. He did the 13th victim or something.
Are you talking about William Castle?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I forget the guy's name. He had a box set. Horror, et cetera, talked about the box set at one point.
Oh, Val Luton?
Yeah, Val Luton. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The 7th victim. That's what it was called. Yeah, that was a good one. And you know, the cultists were in that and all that. So all right. Anyway. All right. So I guess we could probably throw the spoiler flag out. Yeah, so we're going to critique, review, and anything and everything about the film. So as Eric stated, this is a great film to go in completely blind. So you may want to do that. But if you've already seen the film or you don't mind, you know, such as some of our listeners like Kevin Letts, who have no issue watching the film after it's being spoiled, please keep on listening. Otherwise, come back later after you've seen the film. And the film is available everywhere on VOD rental. So places like Vudu, Apple, Amazon, as well as available on disc, both Blu-ray and DVD. All right, so the spoiler is up. So I guess we can begin and discuss. So Eric, I know you had some stuff that you were almost going to talk about.
You're right, right. I just want to hold off on it for a sec. It's not a huge spoiler. But like at the beginning of the movie, when Sam, you know, the initial setup of the whole thing, when Sam gets stiffed on her tip and then doesn't have any gas left and she breaks into the house to try and get her tip, we're on that meeting and Rebecca remains up front, and it really kind of struck my funny bone how
she was
kind of like running like an Amway meeting or something. She's like, you want to get ahead, you want to be successful, well, we can help you do it, and here's how. We're going to summon Baphomet. The whole tone of it, I just thought was really kind of pyramid scheme. Kind of, it cracked me up. It's not what you think of when you think of a satanic ritual. And it really put a smile on my face. I thought it was quite funny the way they set that up.
That's actually a good point, Eric. For whatever reason, I was focusing more on Sam, just for her, the ridiculous of someone just walking in and saying, I want a tip. And Eric being clueless that what they're talking about. But you're absolutely right. This is true. They took a cult, an evil satanic cult, and turned it into a pyramid scheme or one of those make your career or your life self-help. Better.
Yeah,
self-help things.
Like Tony Robbins type of.
Right. Exactly. We'll give you feed you free food if you come and listen to our pitch to buy the condo.
Right. You too can be successful if you just learn how to summon Baphomet. Right.
Yeah. Awesome. I really thought that was pretty good. I loved that. And I also, one of the things I loved too was the way they had the whole power struggle set up. Right. Like the girl who played Gypsy was like hilarious because she was totally unattractive, totally awful. And like, just as a human being, you're like, this person is just awful. They're just not nice.
Right, even for cultists.
And, yeah, totally. But she was like owning it, you know?
Well,
she was like, I think you suck and I should run this. Like, you know, it's so obvious.
I watched an interview with some of the folks. It was a behind the scenes feature. I actually purchased this digitally. And because I had a feeling that Phil was going to want to cover it. So the lady that played that part was talking about how she's worked with Rebecca Romijn before, and she was completely aware of the fact that she was the lead and that she's also like a foot taller than her. So she just thought it was really funny to set up that conflict with her like this little chihuahua going up to Rebecca Romijn and be like, meh, 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 meh.
Right. And not that she's unattractive or whatnot. I mean, you know, she's average looking woman or whatever. But, you know, here's this no, like they even say it in the film, the Viking goddess, you know, when she attacks her, Rebecca Romijn later in the film. You know, so you have this Viking goddess, her words, and then her, which is, like you said, Eric, the chihuahua.
She was a supermodel in the 90s, and there's a reason for it.
Right, and she's still pretty good looking. Yeah,
right. So the actress who plays Gypsy is Arden Mirren, who was I remember she was on Mad TV way back in the 90s.
Okay. I thought I recognized her. I didn't know from where though.
Okay,
no, yeah. Actually, I take it back. From actually 2005 to 2009 is when she was on it.
Oh, really? Okay, so she may be part of that movie because they're doing a Mad TV movie. Believe it or not,
maybe. What? I mean, she's been around for a long, long time. So she's done a lot of different things, bit parts here and there. But yeah, she was like one of those people, you know, I'm watching going, I know her from someplace.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. She's as stated, based off of what you said, Mike, being on Mad TV, most certainly a comedian. And I mean, she's really good. She's, and like you said, Eric, over the top and silly and whatnot.
She's easier to recognize on her IMDb page when she's not wearing a turban and way too much eyeshadow.
Right.
Or was it mascara, whatever. Eye makeup.
Right. Yeah. So basically, Sam is delivering pizzas, and there's some, in my opinion, some really great funny moments in the montage of her delivering pizzas. Some of them come back later. For example, there's one spot where there's this guy trying to get in a couch into his house, and he needs help. And he says, I need help. And she goes, well, I can't. I'm just here to deliver you know, your pizza. And he goes, what's your name? And she goes, Sam. And he goes, I'm Sam too. Sam's help Sam's. Don't you know that? And you know, there's this big thing where he goes on and
code of the Sams.
The code of the Sams. There's 7 million Sams and all Sams help Sams. And you know,
I bet his name was David.
Yeah, no kidding. And so he, you know, so she has to help him out. And then there's this woman that she drives a pizza to that says, do you got to go? And she goes, well, I deliver the pizza. And then, yeah, I do go. And she goes, no, I mean, do you got to go piss? I got this guy in here that wants to, you know, have someone piss on his face, but I already went. So I'll give you $12 to do it. You know, so you know, they get these one-liners that are going on, and then there's another one where some crazy old lady and so forth. And the thing is, though, is that she has to fill her scooter with gas, but her last $5 she has to give to the owner of the pizza parlor specifically because he does not want her or any of his employees to steal or ruin his thermo bag, the bag that keeps the pizzas warm, which is kind of weird. Usually I would think what would happen is if you lose or destroy the bag, they just dock your pay. But in this case, this eliminates her having $5, and I guess she doesn't have a credit card. So it sets up the premise for later, which is she wants to get money for a tip because she got stiffed by one person. I mean, everybody. And then one person didn't even pay for the pizza and gave her an Applebee's gift card. And so she basically takes this last job, but one of her coworkers laughs, even though it's a wealthy section of the city, it's further away and they're known to be very cheap. So they're not big tippers.
I actually like that guy's story about what happened when he went out there. He's like, I went out there and they didn't give me a tip, but there was an orgy going on, so I just jumped right in.
That's awesome.
You go, yeah, right. You go out a pizza boy. You come back a pizza man, or delivery man. Yeah, that was. Look, I did when I was first out of college. I did some had a job doing canvassing. Right, where you just like are knocking on doors, gaining signatures and donations for whatever cause is paying you to do it that day. And I was terrible at it because I was terrible at asking people for money. But I, there were stories I had from people that had worked there for a while, and things along the lines of what you're talking about. Although nobody had confessed to joining in. I have a feeling someone here in the creation of this film probably has actually worked delivering pizzas. And a lot of those things in that montage in the beginning in S-Town are probably based on true events, if not verbatim.
Delivering pizzas has got to be a fucked up job. You never know what's going to happen when that door opens.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know what should happen. People open the door, hand you money, and you give them the pizza, and then you're done. But like the thing, I totally understand the thing about the pizza bag, right? Because you might get a guy. Generally, let's just admit that pizza delivery boy is not necessarily going to be a job that that always attracts the most reliable people.
Right.
You know, you may just get someone drive off, say fuck this, and never come back. And he wants to make sure he gets his bag back.
Yep.
And so I totally understand that. That makes perfect sense to me. It's sad that it makes perfect sense to me, but this is probably the owner, is probably a guy who's been screwed over before by delivery boys who just never come back, or who lose the bag because they drop it off their back of their Vespa.
Yep.
No, that's true. That's true. I just felt that that would be something that would be docked from your pay rather than you have to front the money to use the bag, you know. But
she gets paid by like was it two something an hour plus tips.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
So she, you know, there's not a whole lot of pay to dock.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a fair point. That's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's one of the critics I read mentioned later in the film, even though hell is happening to her, there's a point where she suddenly stops when she hears that another girl is babysitting, and she says, oh, how much do you make an hour? $20. And she goes, oh, that's pretty good.
Right.
So yeah, that's a fair point, Mike. $2 an hour with tips, and she's not getting any tips. That's not going to work. So this is the big thing where her last trip of the day is to go out to this wealthy area that just has orgies based off of her coworker, but they don't tip for shit, he says. So she's going to take a chance that she thinks they will tip because it's a wealthy section. Unfortunately, of course, it takes her just enough gas to get there. Even if she did get a tip, she's still going to have to roll that sucker out of her Vespa out of there. Because, yeah, there's no way she was going to get the gas in time before she runs out. But at this point, that's the whole setup where why she won't be able to that's the main reason, right? That she goes back, barges back in because she ran out of gas, right? She wants money to get gas.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, so, now,
I will say that she does have a reason to believe she'll do better in tips than the guy did.
I would agree with you, Mike. Yeah. I mean, she's an attractive girl, pleasant, and fairly well dressed, even if it's working clothes. So she's more apt to get tips than the two bozos that she works with. That's for sure.
In my experience, women tend to get tipped better than men do. Particularly cute girls tend to get tipped better because guys on some level, whether it's conscious or not, think if they tip better, they got a better chance of getting into her pants.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is absolutely true. When I used to go to Boston all the time prior to being married to get numbers and whatnot, I used to talk to a lot of the bartenders, and most of the bartenders, or 90% of the bartenders, were always attractive women with large breasts that showed a lot of cleavage. And they specifically told me the same thing. The reason they dressed that way was because they got a hell of a lot of tips. And since this girl here was attractive and had that option, yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike. She was going to definitely get more tips than most people. And if she can't get tips, none of these people are getting tips, basically. So it's a tough business in whatever city that she is in. And I tried to identify the city. They had a pretty cool skyline, but I couldn't identify the city.
Phil doesn't know where it was. He's going to go insane.
Yeah, it was pissing me off, and I was waiting for a license plate. I couldn't find none. I was like, God damn it.
What's the heritage? Phil doesn't know. Oh, my God.
I have to, I did get the Viking goddess. So that there you go, Norwegian. But I have to watch the end credits to see where this was filmed, and I didn't bother doing that yet. So I'll have to do that. So, right. So she goes to this mansion, and we're talking like a mansion, like really, like cobblestone driveway, the whole bit. And the guy pays $102 and like 43 cents, zero tip. And she's pissed, but she sucks it up, goes to her vehicle, Vespa, to leave. No gas, so that makes her get pissed. And this is where our film starts, really, right, Eric? This is the moment, right, that you were
discussing. She breaks into the house looking for a tip.
Yep, and she barges into a satanic meeting. And we already talked about that, where, you know, the Tony Robbins type meeting and whatnot. And then, Mike, you introduced yourself with a saying tonight. What was that saying?
Well, that's a very personal question.
There you go. So she says something that makes them suspicious. They ask if she's a virgin, and she answers as Mike just answered, and they said, she's a virgin, get her. And they blow like some drug in her face, and she passes out, and she wakes up. And
that Rebecca Ronja just happened to be carrying all on her at the time.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, that's what you do when you're a satanic cult, Mike.
Well, I think you would maybe keep it in like a little.
You're a teacher. Like, you know, should know
like,
this.
Like for dice. But don't let us carry it out in the open.
But this was a private residence, Mike.
I'm just saying.
She had lots of hidden pockets in that red dress.
All right, okay? So what if you sneeze and you go to cover your face and then you accidentally inhale? I mean, there's real danger there. Well, then you're an idiot. You did watch this movie, right? I think there was a fair percentage of the characters in this film were rightly described as idiots.
Yeah, but they didn't have the dust, did they?
No, they didn't.
Ah!
They did not. Yeah, that's true. They did not have the dust. I'm actually watching the film as we speak, so I'm trying to find out here if she actually had the dust just on her, or if
you don't see where it comes from.
She just she walks.
I just
over,
watched
she
the movie.
Hands
it,
up.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, so we'll Mike's doing the nitpicks, you know. Yeah, but you know, I mean, I know you're evil, Mike, but these people are more evil than you, so they probably hold this stuff in their hands with them, you know.
I'm just saying, it seems really inconvenient.
Mike's not evil; he's just drawn that way.
Yeah. There you go, and that's a fair point, Mike.
I just wish they would use a thinner point.
It would be inconvenient. You're absolutely right, but then again, you don't know when you're going to meet a virgin.
Yeah, that's true. You never know.
So you got to have it with
you.
You
got to have your magic virgin pass out dust.
That's right.
Actually, I do really need to say here that I thought the scene where she wakes up with the guy and all of a sudden he just takes his clothes off and he's like, I'm not going to let you die a virgin. Oh, my God. I was fucking dying.
Oh, Darrow O'Connell?
Holy hell, that was funny. I don't even know why it was.
I'm going to save you whether you like it or not.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It seems to me like that, which is a plot point later, that if the problem is you need a virgin to sacrifice, that there's a real simple way to avoid being that virgin.
Right.
You know, and it's something that you never really quite see in the movies where they're trying to sacrifice the virgin. You know, I understand maybe...
Not a virgin anymore.
Holding on to your virginity, that's very, you know, that's fine, that's noble, that's great. But you're talking about putting your life on the line for Satanists.
But what was so funny about it was...
Oh, my God, that's a great pickup line, Mike. Oh, my God, dude. If I was single still, I would go up to girls and say, dude, you don't want to be captured.
Let me save you.
Right. We don't want to be captured by Satanists. Come on.
Yesterday was the first time anyone accused you of toxic masculinity. That was just
there you go.
Wow.
Oh my God! Please don't even go there. That whole thing was just so stupid.
Yeah, I know.
That's absurd.
Stupid.
So Jerry O'Connell. The last time I remember seeing Jerry O'Connell, he was getting his penis bitten off by a piranha.
I don't know what I thought. I was like, "Oh, that's the guy from." That's the guy from Piranha.
Right.
From Piranha 3D. He apparently has had it reattached.
It is rare to go.
He's only in as the number two name in the film because he's in the movie for, you know, less than 5 minutes, and his picture's on the cover. His name is above the title.
He's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he's good here. He did not learn firearm safety.
For folks who don't know, the lead actress of the film, besides Sam, obviously, the character, the actress that plays Sam, is Rebecca Romijn. Rebecca Romijn and Jerry O'Connell have been married for over 10 years, so I'm sure that's how they brought him in, because it was, you know, if Rebecca's starring, it's like, oh, you can get my husband to do this, you know, part that is quote-unquote nothing, and then suddenly it becomes one of the biggest parts in the film.
Yeah, and in another one of those interviews, she said, I actually give her credit for not being spoiler. She kept it spoiler-free, but she said, yeah, if I have any passive-aggressive issues going on with Jerry, I got to work them out in this movie.
That's true. Yeah, Rebecca did say that. Because I have those things on the desk, too, Eric. Yeah, that was hilarious. Oh, my God, that's awesome. Yeah. So basically Jerry did something wrong, or his character is not named Jerry, but he's married. Actually, in this film, he's married to Rebecca Romijn as well. And so his name is Sam Ross, and he basically states that he's going to be killed because he screwed up, and if you're in here, you probably will be too. And then she says something, and he goes, "Oh, are you a virgin?" And she says, "What does she say, Mike?"
That's a very personal question.
That's right. And then he goes, "Oh my God, you're a virgin." And then, as Chrissy said, the camera pans back to Sam trying to get out of the room. And then we turn back to the other Sam, and he's basically naked. And he basically says, "I'm going to save you."
That was what got me. It wasn't even necessarily the lines, which were funny. It was that 1 second he's totally clothed, and they switch back, and he's almost completely like, just like, "I'm gonna fuck you right now, whether you like it or not." Like, and I don't know why I found that so funny. I was like, "Holy shit, that's hilarious!" I could not stop laughing. That was really
well. Again, it's a juxtaposition of, "I'm going to rape you, whether you like it or not, for your own good."
Safety.
It's just so fucking twisted.
It's so twisted, but that also came, I think, right around that same time where he's like, "They're going to render my fat to make candles, and they're going to take your liver and do something." And it was just this fantastic speech about what they were going to do with the body parts while he's naked, crawling on the floor, I don't know. That whole scene, to me, that was the funniest scene in the entire movie, for whatever reason. It just cracked me up. It was really well done and very funny. And then there's another speech later when she meets the girl, Judy. That speech was pretty fucking awesome, too. But yeah, anyway.
Well, when I first saw this scene, I was like horrified. It's like, oh my God, this is so politically incorrect. But then, you know, after you listen to everything that, or watch all the extras that Eric did, you find out that the movie was 50% produced by a woman. It starred 90% woman. It was directed by a woman. It was intentionally this way. It's like, okay.
Well, weirdly, I don't know if people know this or not. It's not very well or widely reported, but women are actually people, and they are different from each other.
Wait,
and not every woman is sensitive to the same things that that many other women are sensitive to. Right. And some women can laugh at a young girl being about to be raped for her own good to save her life.
Produced by a woman, starring 90% woman.
Right.
Right.
Well, but here's the thing about that. If the person who wrote that scene was a woman, then what's especially awesome is that this poor woman was probably propositioned like that at some point and said, "Oh my God, I got to put this in a fucking movie or something. This is great." You know, because that's what I would do with it, you know. Can you imagine some guy just being all dry? I mean, I've gotten some pickup lines in my day, but holy shit.
To save you from saving.
Bill just said he's planning on using it, so, I mean, come on.
But he doesn't, because she starts beating the shit out of him, and he pulls a gun out and tries to shoot her, and the gun doesn't work. So he does what any stupid person would do, and looks into the barrel of a gun and pulls the trigger again and shoots himself in the neck. Oh my God.
That was as good as his death in Pearl.
I guess Drew Hotel is just meant to have horribly humiliating deaths in movies. That's his thing.
But then the wife comes in and she's like, "Oh no, what did you do?" Like, there's blood everywhere, and it's like a bloodbath and shit. And she's just like, "Oh, what did you do? You bad boy." Like, you know, like he's a 5-year-old that painted the walls
with
like
the virgin. What happened to her?
Yeah, where'd the virgin go? You lost my virgin. Like, he's bleeding to death. Oh my God. Yeah, there was some pretty fucking fucked up shit in this movie. And I do like when we get later to the whole speech about the demons.
Mm-hmm.
where the girl, I guess Judy, when she first meets her, and she's going, "Do you know demons count every grain of
sand?" Right. That reminded me of that.
Their rules.
That Spanish film, that cattle bass film, or whatever the fuck it was.
Aramentari?
Yeah. I texted Mike, and I texted you too, Eric. I go, "See, it's true. Demons have to count every piece of salt."
Yeah, you texted me and you said, "It's in this movie too. They have to count every grain of salt. I guess it is real." And my response was, "Well, I guess it depends on what your definition of real is."
That's right.
But it was,
it was said in more than one place. If that's your definition of real, then
it was part of the mythology. It was part of the mythology, is what I meant.
Yeah, but what made me laugh about that is, there's this whole speech that I really do want to go back and listen to again, because it was really funny. It starts off with, "Demons have more rules than Yahtzee. They count every grain of salt. They have more things than Yahtzee, you know, more rules and blah, blah, blah." And then it turns into this big, long speech about they can turn your liver into fire ants and it'll come out your coot shoe.
I have it, Christy. I will read
it. Oh, my God, you do? Oh, my God, please. Yeah. It was
somebody
so funny.
somebody, at one point, Sam says something and Judy turns to her and says, "Oh, my God, you're like a big retarded baby.
Yes.
My mom and her butt buddies are booty calling Baphomet, and we're going to hide in here like scared little bitches because they can turn your liver into fire ants. If they find us, they're not going to kill us. They're going to do shit that you can't comprehend, and they're not going to stop until you've been strapped naked to a barbed wire altar with 15-foot beast of Gehenna and his double-pronged demon dung walking around your coot chute like it's a revolving door of ground beef."
That's it. That's it. I fucking loved that. I was dying. Because she's so serious, too. It's like this big serious, like, it's not, she does it totally straight. She plays it completely straight and, you know, a little bit angry and, like, nervous. But the shit that she's saying is so hilarious that what makes it funny is it's just this total paradox, because it's like, oh my God.
Right. And when Sam is like discounting her, she goes, I was just about to be fucked by a strap on."
Kildo. I think she called it a kildo.
She called it a kildo, which I laughed at because I thought I did it better, because I had my notes. I wrote down drildo.
Right. I mean, we jumped ahead a little because we forgot about the babysitter. The babysitter was basically trying to drug her. Because she runs into the next door mansion, you know, and she says, "I need help." And the baby says, all right, hold on. Here, drink some water. It'll calm you down." And she goes to supposedly call 911. Right. Oh, Coke. You're right. Coca-Cola. And then she doesn't drink it because she hears noise upstairs and she puts it down. And then one of the little brats drinks it and he passes out. And to cover up him passing out, the babysitter was trying to pretend that he was a diabetic. He goes, "How could you give soda to a child?"
Well, and then the better part is that she's saying to the babysitter, "Stay back," and she's, don't move. She's like, "I'm not moving." And then the other kid sneaks up behind her and starts tasering her. And so she's on the ground getting tasered by this like 7-year-old kid, and she clocks him. She just punches him full out of the face and goes,
"I heard." I live 4 hours away from Mike, but I heard Mike screaming.
Yes. Oh man, that was good.
Well, actually, though, I think it was after. I don't mean that, Mike. You wouldn't appreciate someone hitting a child. So,
oh, sure, I would.
It depends on the child.
Right, and
if it's the wrong child, I've got a good imagination.
Right. And so she finally goes upstairs to investigate what the noise is after she takes out the two brats and the babysitter. She gets attacked by this chick with a giant drill dildo who happens to be the sister of the babysitter. And she oddly takes out the babysitter and the drill chick, and
by accident, but
by accident, right? Right, which is hilarious because, like you said, you know, after Judy, she saves Judy, who's about to be killed, and we find out that she's the daughter of Rebecca Romijn and Jerry O'Connell's character, and Judy gives that big speech, and then, you know, basically says, you know, you're an idiot and all this other stuff. But then when she finds out the babysitter and dildo chick are dead, she goes, you're a badass. And that's when she says the great line, in my opinion, which is, and I have it written down here somewhere. It's a great line. It was awesome because, you know, now they're going to rock and roll and take out everybody. And she says, get your big tits in gear. They know we're here. And then they take off and they are about to.
That, by the way, that's not a great line. You just like it because it has the word tits in it.
Tits in it. Yeah, that's not. Yeah, not a.
Oh, come on. That was hilarious. I was laughing my ass. All right. Well,
yeah.
I thought it was a great line. anyway. And so forth. So where do we want to go from here? What do we want to talk about? So she, meaning Judy, thinks Sam is a badass because she finds a dildo chick and babysitter dead, even though, as you said, Eric, it was unintentionally they were killed. But Judy doesn't know that. And so Judy thinks Sam is suddenly a badass.
Right.
Now, from here, what do we want to talk about? What do we want to talk about? I guess we could talk about they flee this house and the Satanists come to this house and they find Sam's shirt. So they're able to create a like spell using the shirt to like have this demon thing or Haxan cloak. Yeah, right.
That's a recurring theme in the film is that they, you know, is the having the little bit of a person, some item of their in their possession, and then you can use it to what do you call it? To cast a spell on them or have some power over them, and yeah, so that's what they do here. They get her. Was it her sweater?
Yeah, no, it was her T-shirt because when she got attacked by Jerry O'Connell, he ripped the shirt off her, and yet she still had it on her, and she tossed it into the flower pot.
Which is how we know she was. She had a bra from Kmart.
That's right. Exactly. There you go. Well done. Yes. Judy mentions that. She goes, oh, you're not one of the Satanists because you have a bra from Kmart. Which was a funny line when they said it.
It is. I can Chrissy can you spot where the bra's from just by taking a glimpse at the strap? I mean, that's.
Well, to be honest with you, I will say this, and I think most women would back me up on this. You might not necessarily know where they got it from, but you can definitely tell the difference when you're looking at it, as long as you have enough time to look at it, between a very well-made bra and a very cheap bra.
Okay.
At a first glance, you really can, because cheap bras are usually extremely thin. They don't usually have the support, and they're not usually made of a material that is, you know, expensive enough to breathe, if that makes any sense. It's hard to explain, but a woman can definitely look at another woman's bra and know whether or not it is kind of on the cheap side. So okay. I had no problem with that line because I mean, or maybe I'm just a freak. You can send all your emails to me, ladies, but yeah.
Super freak. Super freak.
Yeah, but there's no reason that Judy could have been equally freaky.
What?
There's no reason that Judy couldn't have been equally freaky.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, she could have been.
I think it was intentionally. I think you're right, Chrissy, because they knew that many folks, women and men who take off bras of women, would get the joke.
Well, and here's the other thing too, though. This girl that she meets, right, was extremely wealthy. So here's a girl who is extremely wealthy. You know, later on, she talks about having her Lexus and whatever when she was 16. And so therefore she would know what a cheap bra looks like immediately, because she probably doesn't ever buy those. She probably only buys really high quality shit. So noticing the cheap stuff, I mean, me personally, I haven't bought cheap bras in probably 15 years. Maybe even more longer than that, like 20 years, I haven't bought a cheap bra. And I had to buy one recently to go with a costume, and I just needed a certain color and I didn't want to spend a lot of money on it. So I go on Amazon and I buy a brand that I would have bought 15 years ago and thought it was fine. Holy crap. This bra came in the mail. I opened it up and I went, oh my God, this is the cheapest piece of shit ever. And it was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever worn. I threw it out.
This is Bra Corner, brought to you by Dark Discussions.
There you go. Anyway.
Well, Eric, we do have women listeners, so we have to appreciate them as well.
So I want to talk about jock straps now. No.
They weren't in this movie, though. So, but yes.
No, but Jerry O'Connell was in his brief.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
He was one of the tiny whities.
Oh my God, you're right. They weren't boxes. You're right. They were briefs. All right. So we have the two major scenes that happen right after this. Basically, obviously, we do have the salt scene where Judy begins to put salt everywhere, because she said if demons try to cross salt, they will have to count every grain. But we have the struggle between the cult, Rebecca Romaine, and the Chihuahua. Rebecca Romaine has an idea because she finds Sam's phone. So she decides to maybe find something out from there, which brings in a pizza boy to the scene.
By the way, that was probably my favorite line in the movie, when she decides to seduce the pizza boy to her place. She just calls him up and she's talked to him. She says, I have an 8-ball of cocaine and I feel empty inside. Why don't you come over and fill me up?
It's awesome. Best ever. Yes, yes. And of course, this bozo shows up and he thinks he's made it pretty good after he sees Rebecca Romaine, even though he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. And then the other scene is, that other scene where the kitchen scene where Sam and Judy talk about Sam's prior life being a cancer survivor happens actually after the pizza boy scene, right? Because
I don't remember.
Yeah, basically what happens is the pizza boy scene happens. Rebecca Romaine's character becomes incapacitated for a little bit, and then Chihuahua woman begins to do a voodoo spell on Judy, and that's when Judy has to be saved by having like these magical writings placed on her body. Yeah, right. There you go. And in that time, she asks, you know, Sam, you know, you got to tell me a story, otherwise I'm going to go crazy. And that's when Sam talks about her prior life. But before we get to that, I guess we can discuss the pizza boy and how Chihuahua takes over the cult, at least temporarily. So pizza boy comes, he gets killed. And similar to tea leaves in a cup where people can see.
Is that called necromancy?
I would think so, right?
She's trying to read his guts like people read tea leaves.
Yeah.
Could be divination.
Either way,
necromancy is magic of the dead, but yeah. Yeah, she pulls his intestines out through his mouth. And he's still alive while she's pulling his intestines out through his mouth.
Well, I mean, technically, you can, just to be quick here, because I don't want to get us on a tangent, but you can pretty much divine from anything. It's like I've said about, you know, how you could make a Ouija board out of the back of a cereal box if you wanted to, and it would be fine,
right,
and it would work.
You mentioned that, Chrissy. You mentioned that during our witch board episode.
Yeah, it's the same. It's actually like the same type of deal. Like you can use anything you want to divine the future or whatever it is you're trying to do. It's really just about the intent. You know, if I wanted to, like, if I ate a bunch of candy bars and then just said, oh, okay, I'm going to throw these wrappers and try to read my future. Like, I'm an experienced tarot reader, so I could probably read from the designs on the, you know, it's whatever catches your eye. It's kind of hard to explain, but I pretty much believe that if you're skilled enough, you can divine off of anything. It doesn't have to, because it's not, the magic is not in the objects. The magic is in who's reading them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but there's a specific name for the type of magic that's being practiced. I was just trying to come up with it.
Oh, the actual magic that they're doing.
Yeah. I'm going to look something up real quick. I'll be right back.
Well, I will tell you that I thought that that was really creepy, that moment where the girl was being tortured. And it was like, you know, she's got, oh God, she's, go ahead. What is it?
The reason this was clawing at the back of my head is because there's a series of books written by an author named Brian Lumley. The first one is called Necroscope, and that's actually what it is. And a necromancer can communicate with the dead, but necroscope, as defined in this book, I don't know if he made it up for the book or if it's a term that's in general use, describes someone who can communicate with the dead, unlike necromancers who hear extract knowledge they seek by brutal eviscerations of corpses. A necroscope can communicate with them as equals, peaceful, and without any physical interference. The abilities of necroscope are defined as a type of ESP. I'm sorry, I mixed that up. Sorry, that's not it. Disregard.
Bloody hell!
I fucked that up.
Explain, sir.
I fucked it up. I just read the wrong thing.
Then what's the right thing?
I don't have the right thing. Continue.
Fair enough.
Well, wait, what do you mean you don't have... You have the definition and not the term in front of you?
I had the term and the definition for the wrong thing.
Okay.
Brian Lumley is very disappointed in you, Eric.
Well, I think he's dead, so that's okay.
Right. You did promote his book, though.
Yes. It's a good book, actually. I think you'd like it.
Yeah. Actually, Barrett Heisner, one of our listeners and members of our Facebook group and a coworker of mine, as a matter of fact, he actually says it's one of his favorite books. So I've heard very many good things about it. Absolutely. And he's, I think Brian Lumley's a British author, as a matter of fact, for folks who care.
Yes, he is.
Yep. So she tries to read the guts, but before she can finish, she gets stabbed in the head by Chihuahua woman.
Actually, was it her? It was somebody else who actually did the stabbing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the underlings.
Kim?
Yeah.
I think that's Kim, right, did the actual stabbing.
Yeah. It was Jordan Ladd's character, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, and so it looks like Rebecca Romijn's character is dead. Which kind of shocked me because we're only halfway through the film or two thirds, and it's like, wow, they took out the.
Yeah, it was unexpected, for sure.
Yeah. And then Chihuahua woman basically starts doing a voodoo thing on Judy because they don't know where Judy is because Judy escaped with Sam. But if they can voodoo her to death, they will be able to stop everything and capture the Virgin again. And during that voodoo bullshit, Judy begins to like start having like an attack and says, I know what's going on. I need you to write what are those runes or something on our body?
I don't know. They're glyphs or something.
Yeah, glyphs, right. There you go.
I don't actually practice dark magic.
No, I don't either. So she basically asks Sam to write these glyphs or runes on her body because that will prevent the voodoo from working. And during that, she says that she needs Sam to give her a story because otherwise she's going to just snap. And so Sam starts talking about Harry Potter and then gets scolded. And then says, all right, I'll tell you a story.
Once there was a boy named Harry Potter. Are you fucking kidding me?
And so she talks about her prior life. And basically, she was a survivor of cancer. She had a boyfriend that she met at the cancer center. The boyfriend always had a goal to go to Australia, so that's the reason why her song at the beginning of the film that she showed to her friends talked about Australia. And she says that her cancer went into remission, but she couldn't go back to see her boyfriend, whose cancer did not go back in remission, simply for the fact that she was a coward. And she feels devastated because her boyfriend died. And she is a survivor.
Just for the record, Phil, I felt the same way about this backstory that you felt about the backstory for Blake Lively in The Shallows.
Oh, you really?
Yeah. I was just like, what the fuck? Why do I care about this? I really don't.
Yeah.
I think I had a couple. That was one of the things where it really kind of bugged me because I understand that this is very tongue-in-cheek, this movie, and it is silly on purpose. So I was sort of torn between, did they actually do this to kind of make fun of all of these big, deep reveals of all these traumatized characters in these horror films, which makes sense, or were they being serious about it? Because if they were being serious about it, they did not set that up at all well. So I'm going to go with option B here, in that they were just really trying to make a point about all of these, you know, because in these horror movies, you get this moment usually where the characters are, you know, facing their death, right? You know, kind of like, they have this big, deep thing they have to reveal. And so at first I was very annoyed by it because I was like, this is totally unjustified. It comes out of nowhere, blah, blah, blah. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know, they might have done that on purpose just because they wanted to make fun of that particular trope that is in every single horror film. And that's why it was so over the top, too, because it's like, oh, not only does she meets her boyfriend at the cancer center and they're going through cancer together. And she goes, I mean, the whole thing was just so contrived that I'm almost wondering if they did that just on purpose, just to make fun of it. In which case, it worked very well. It wasn't necessarily funny, but I did get the point, if that makes sense.
But it does also, I mean, it does serve a story purpose in that it explains why she's a, whatever, 25-year-old virgin.
No, but see, that's the problem, though. I really did not think that that worked in that case. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, so there's plenty of people that are virgins just for the hell of being virgins. We don't really see her being angry. We don't see her being depressed at all. We don't see any of this. We see her get thrown into an unusual situation, and she kind of deals with it like any 25-year-old that we honestly don't know. We don't really meet her. We don't really get to know her at all. So that's why I would almost go with option B, because if it's option A, like you said, Mike, where this is supposed to explain why she's a virgin and all this, they didn't set that up properly, if that's what they were trying to do, because we need to see an inner struggle. Instead, we just get this character and it's like, oh, dude, I'm doing. And because then there's that line where she goes, this job was the day I was going to turn this around. You know, like her job at a pizza joint making $2 an hour was going to turn her life around. So that's why I'm really torn. I'd love to.
It's the journey of 1,000 steps. You know, it's, you know, you have to take that first step, start the pizza place and work your way up to the Supreme Court or whatever her eventual plan was that she was going to go to. I mean, I didn't have that big an issue with it. I kind of liked that they squeezed a lot of it in while they were doing the writing on the ceiling of the skin, because at least something was going on. And anyway, gave him something to do while they were delivering the exposition. It is a giant exposition dump right in the middle of the film. But I don't know. I mean, given how we were thrown into the film, I didn't necessarily feel that we needed to know a whole lot about her background, period. But I also don't know that we needed to know a lot about about that to start off. I don't think we needed to have a maudlin moment or something early on to give her, or this inner struggle, or I don't know that we needed to really get a whole lot of that, because, you know, you don't need to have every minute of your day betraying that kind of aspect of your past, your history.
Right. But we needed to see more of her just dealing with something. She's just really kind of blank. You know what I mean? Until we get to that scene, she's just your blank final girl running around being
right.
Chased.
I don't think it fundamentally changes how I felt about the character. So I don't think it was necessary. Right. I think it works fine that she's blank, because she becomes more of a gateway character for the audience. You know, certainly anybody who's had to work a shit job before should be able to identify with her, wouldn't you think?
Well, I mean, I think so. I felt that was really kind of, if there was one weakness in the movie, it was, for me, it was that.
Well,
that we didn't get any clue.
If you remove that scene, right, does it change the movie in any way?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, the movie, I don't feel any more or less sympathetic for the character. You save a couple of minutes. It was completely not necessary. And if they're trying to make fun of it, like for instance, in Gremlins, you have the scene, where I can remember the, blanking on the actress's name, Jennifer Connelly, right? Phoebe Cates,
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah. Where Phoebe Cates is talking about her daddy dying in the,
dying in the chimney. Yeah.
In the chimney. And that's played straight. You can't tell if they're making fun of her or not.
Right, right, right.
And then in Gremlins 2, there's a scene where she pauses and delivers the same exact monologue about, I think, President's Day or Washington's birthday or something. And that is very clearly making fun of itself and that general kind of trope in horror films. So here, I think it was played so straight, I don't know that I could buy it as being something that was mocking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So again, I think I don't think it was necessary. I didn't really bother me, but I don't think it was necessary.
Well, let me throw this out there. Okay, so if they're going to do it, it was like you said, Mike. It was a perfect time to do it because they had the rune and Gwyth writing on the skin to fight the voodoo magic. So if they're going to do the expedition dump, at least they're doing it during a scene rather than have its own scene where it would be like most people would say, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Obviously with the Phoebe Cates example, they do it right at the beginning of the film. So it sets up her character right then. Here, maybe I was kind of surprised they had it in here, because it's like, I didn't think of what you said, Chrissy, which is they're just making fun of the trope in horror films, which could be possible. So because I didn't think of that, I was looking at it like, oh, this is weird. They're having a serious moment during what is generally a comedic film. So it kind of was making me scratch my head a little bit. But it also could be that they wanted us, the audience, that maybe they didn't feel the audience liked her character enough prior to that, meaning she was just as ditzy, even though she's not blonde. She was like this ditzy, quote unquote, blonde type character prior to this moment. They maybe wanted to add some depth to her surviving as a cancer victim. Never mind, like you said, Chrissy, which is this is the conflict change thing where, okay, now we know her motivation from turning from a ditz that would be killed immediately to a survivor.
Right.
Because now she has this moment where she's talking about how she fucked up by not saving or visiting her boyfriend before he died because she was too scared to see her boyfriend die, never mind seeing her own, I guess, mortality. But she also now was looking at Judy as the stand-in for her boyfriend, in a sense, where I can now try to save the boyfriend, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, in other words, Judy, if she can save Judy, she's saving her boyfriend now, in her eyes. Because
she's redeeming herself. In her own eyes, she will be letting go of her guilt.
Right.
Supposedly. If we were going to take this... Yeah, I mean, if we were going to take this seriously, yeah, that's what it would be then. In that the character gets a second chance at trying to fix things. That's what that would be about.
Right. Yeah, and that's all I can think of. Unless it's what you said, Chrissy, which is they're laughing at the horror trope of, you know, like when the two survivors are in the cave and the killer's just outside and they know they're about to die, and then they start talking about their regrets and all that bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I it could be a combination of both. Either would work. I mean, I think your point where it is a laugh trope, especially since it's during a funny scene, never mind the redeeming thing too, because it also is her – okay, this is her going to beat out her guilt. Absolutely. So it's interesting. It was the one scene that I was a little confused during the film, because up till that scene when she's doing that story – it was pretty much like funny, ha ha, and then suddenly we get this sad story during a moment that is kind of funny, and it was kind of different. It was kind of odd, I think, at least for me. Any other information or comments on that, Eric? What is your opinion on that, Eric? Even because you mentioned,
I gave my opinion on that.
You did. I thought you would want to elaborate.
Nope.
I knew you were going to say that, you bastard. Fair enough. All right, so let's talk about the post voodoo scene. So what happens next? Anyone remember? It's a lot of set pieces, so I can understand.
Well, and we did that a little out of order, which is that right after that scene is when Chihuahua takes control of the cult.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, exactly. Because Romaine gets taken out after that. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
So Chihuahua takes over the cult, and of course she's a complete idiot. She doesn't know how to run a cult.
Right.
All right, so Judy and Sam become truly friends at this point, and they trust each other now.
Yes.
Well, we forgot to mention the reason Judy's in jeopardy. The reason Judy's in jeopardy and was about to be killed by a drilled dildo was specifically for the fact that she intentionally loses her virginity in a scene before the credits, where we even know who she is. And we find out later in the film at this point that she lost her virginity intentionally because she didn't want to be a victim of the satanic cult.
Right. She didn't want to get sacrificed to Baphomet.
Exactly. Because her own mother was going to sacrifice her to Baphomet.
It's an honor.
That's right. Because they can then get a free condo and or a meal while they buy the condo. And that's right. All right. So what happens next? I forget, actually. Does it go right into the orgy?
Well, at some point, the girls actually escape.
Yeah.
And then Rebecca Romaine comes back to life.
Right.
And I don't know why Rebecca Romaine came back to life. I don't know if they explained that and I just missed it. Did they explain it? Or are we just to assume it was some dark pact she had with the devil?
I
just thought she was a supermodel.
That's true too. I'm thinking it's what you said, Eric, which is we just assume that there's a dark path with or whatever.
Just I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, because it isn't fully explained really, but it's good because we don't want to lose Rebecca Romijn because her character's hilarious.
Right. So Rebecca Romijn actually tracks the girls down and uses her witchy ways to subdue them. And
witchy.
She's a witch.
That's right.
She uses her witchy ways to bring them back to sacrifice. And there's a dramatic scene where she confronts her daughter, and her daughter's like, "Fuck you, mom," and she's like, "No, fuck you." And then Sam's like, "No, fuck you," and oh, so she's like, "Really, fuck both of you." And they wake up tied to an altar. Am I missing
and
anything
with time,
here?
And with time in the and with time of the essence, they made sure to redress the two of them.
Yeah, they did. They did. They're now in very weirdly skimpy sacrificial outfits.
Because that's the first rule of cults, is that if you're going to sacrifice a person, they can't be in a t-shirt and jeans.
I guess not.
That's right. They're going to be in BDMS? BDMS. Is that how it's said? Is it BDMS or BMDS?
I know what you're talking about. I don't know which order the letters go in.
BDSM.
Okay. BDSM. That's right. Yeah, yeah. So they have to be in that type of gear. Yeah.
So Rebecca Romijn gets to have a moment taking leadership back over the cult, and she makes Chihuahua pay.
Right. They should have made it better, though. That would have been
She
much.
Casts another spell, and basically while she's telling her how horrible it is to drown, we see a Chihuahua girl have water just like start coming out of her mouth and eyes like she's drowning, even though she's not actually in water. It was kind of cool.
It was kind of, yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay.
There are some very fun deaths in this film.
Oh, yeah, a lot of good ones. Yeah. I mean, the dildo one was the best.
It was pretty good. Was awesome. I gotta say.
That was awesome.
I have not seen that before.
Oh, and having your intestines pull out of your mouth was pretty good by, you know,
That made me uncomfortable. That was pretty gross.
Right.
Wait a minute. But see, it's having your testes pulled out after you've had your heart pulled out through your neck.
That's the one I was going to say. It's Jerry O'Connor shooting himself.
After you shot yourself in the neck. After you just tried to rape someone to save their life.
Well, at that point, don't you kind of have it coming?
Yes. Well, you know, you can have a great death for someone who has it coming, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
They don't have to be sad deaths.
Right.
And certainly, you know, a gypsy getting drowned at the bottom of the ocean in the middle of Connecticut or wherever they are certainly counts.
So now, one thing that I'm actually kind of grateful for, but I have to call out as an inconsistency in the movie, is that they had previously said that Sam was going to lose her virginity, be torn about by a giant two-pronged dick and give birth at the same time. So I'm glad they didn't actually show that. All we see is get magically pregnant really quick.
That, my friend.
Wasn't that supposed to be a different demon that she was Judy was talking about? It wasn't Basimuth. It was Jenna or something. I don't know.
Jenna? Again, yes, Jenna. I don't actually practice the black arts, so I don't know the difference.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons, we remember all of them from the Nine Hells.
No, I don't. That was 30 years ago, Phil.
Fair enough.
I remember some of them better than I remember others.
Right. I remember Asmodeus was the
he was the one that looked like your traditional Satan.
Yeah. He
at was least the illustration in the monster manual.
Right.
I'm kind of picturing, I think, was Baphomet the one that was like carrying a...
Deities? I can't remember.
That was the original Monster Manual. Was that Monster Manual or Fiend Folio?
Or Deities and Demigods. Sorry, yeah.
No, it wasn't in that one either.
Oh, Monster Manual 2.
It was either Monster Manual or Fiend Folio. I'm pretty sure it was Monster Manual. I think the Daemons were in Fiend Folio.
Daemons was Fiend Folio. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Daemons were the neutral evils. They weren't in the Abyss or the Nine Hells. They were
Christy's sitting over there going, man, these guys are a bunch of fucking nerds.
We sure are.
I totally actually am. I'm like, holy shit, I'm just going to sit here and listen to all this crap that I have no idea what it means.
But my favorite, though.
But it's all good, whatever.
My favorite were the Slades from the Limbo. The Frogmen, those were cool.
Oh,
yeah. They were the Chaotic Neutrals.
Yeah,
they weren't evil, but they basically wanted to burn everything down, so they were all right in my books.
Okay, but I would like to say this if we're talking about nerdy things. All I need to know is, do any of you have a Google system hooked up in your house where you can control things like your heat and your music and all that stuff like they show on the commercials?
No, I refuse to have a voice assistant. I think only bad things can happen.
Okay. So then none of you are as big nerds as one of my friends who did that, and it's so ridiculous. It's like, Google, turn off my bathroom lights. Google, turn on my shower. I'm not even kidding. I'm like, oh, my God, dude. It's just, like, creepy.
Just go for the fucking clapper. I mean, Jesus.
No, I'm
not that lazy.
The original Xbox One, which came with, what do they call it, Kinect? That had some voice control elements to it. And I tried to use it for a while, but it's just like, my friend Susie, who's Dan's wife, she used to laugh at me because I used to use the voice control to turn the Xbox off, but it usually didn't understand me on the first try. So I'd go, Xbox, turn off. It would just like sit there. But if I used a stern tone of voice, that would work. So I go, Xbox, turn off. Xbox, turn off! And then it would actually turn off. And Susie would laugh her ass off at me yelling at my Xbox. So after I got rid of that one, I don't use voice control on anything anymore because it just doesn't work.
I'll tell you, it's creepy to the point, and like, it's really, like, you know, the heat goes up and down. I mean, everything in the house is connected to this thing. It's really freaking scary. And I was just like, I wonder what would happen if I, you know, maybe got just like a little too inebriated and like accidentally spilled wine on whatever that thing is that controls it, what would happen?
We have gone way down a rabbit hole here.
Yes.
It
watches you sleep and shit.
Baphomet.
It's creepy.
Pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. But before we get into that, I want to mention one thing about the salt. I loved how they used the Dollar Tree salt. 99 cents, Dollar Tree.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it was just one of those. I don't know if it was.
That's actually a great detail that we have to point out, Phil. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because they do the salt circle when they're doing the summoning ritual, but when she kills Kim, I think it is. Kim kind of claws with her fingers as she's making her way out of the world and puts a hole in the circle of salt, which means it's not secure anymore.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Also, Sam actually does lose her virginity, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, but that's what I said. They don't show it, which I'm grateful for. All you see is her belly start to swell immensely all of a sudden. They don't actually show her getting raped by a demon, so thanks for that. I didn't want to see that.
Well, right. I mean, this isn't the type of film. I've seen other films where that happens, such as Rosemary's Baby and whatnot. But those films aren't supposed to be kind of funny. So obviously, if you're doing a funny film, you don't want to, you know, make fun out of actual rape, even though they do the Jerry O'Connor one. I have to say that the demons in this that they do show is the demon that comes out of the tree earlier in the film, and then the Baphomet or whatever he is or whatever this demon is, they're pretty damn good for like you said, Mike, a low budget film. They're pretty damn good.
Well, and it's clear that the majority of the budget went towards the second half of the movie.
Sure, yeah, no doubt. So poor Sam gets raped by the demon because she is going to be the virgin that's going to bring Baphomet to Earth to basically do what Rosemary's Baby was going to do and Omen Baby was going to do and everybody else's baby from hell is going to do. So she was unfortunately chosen and whatnot. And when she does escape, I do love how she does the I see this in another movie, and I forget what funny movie it was, but she basically puts the knife to herself and says, I'll kill it.
Right.
And I thought that was
actually, you know where you've seen that? Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. That's right. Yes.
I'll kill him.
Right. They go, oh, no, that's terrible. That's right. Exactly. That's where I saw it. And so forth. So, but this is where Judy gets killed. So her.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
No, no. And it also causes, I mean, it's odd because it makes, if we look at this as a serious film, because there is partly, you know, some seriousness in the deepness of the film when it comes to Judy, I mean, Sam's story. It looks like Sam failed, but it's actually a kind of a defining moment too. But continue, Eric. I'm sorry to interrupt there.
Well, and basically, Rebecca Romijn, she doesn't even have a weapon, right? That's just her fingernails she uses.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
yeah, she uses her fingernails to slit her own daughter's throat.
She's a supermodel.
Well, I don't think those two things are related, but...
Well, no, but I mean, she's got the nice French manicure, you know, those long fingernails.
I don't think that's a standard feature of a French manicure, but
yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
So, yeah, Judy dies, and I didn't think that was going to happen. So Sam's obviously upset, and then... She has to complete the process of giving birth, and she's doing her two fluffy bunnies things. Two fluffy bunnies trying to take herself out of the situation, and then actually gives birth to two fluffy bunnies. Everybody's like, WTF?
Before you continue, Eric, I have to say that there was one thing about this film, and I don't think it was intentional. This film must have been filmed in the middle of winter, wherever they were filming it, because Rebecca Romijn, when she's doing her speech, literally has her breath. You can see her breath. It's that cold. So I just feel terrible.
I mean, it's winter. You can see your breath on cold summer nights.
Well, all right. You may be right. But either way, I feel all these people, the extras plus Sam and Judy, are like – completely naked or half naked. And,
oh,
and
I'm sure they were cold. Yes, that's true.
Fucking, he's a motherfucker. Anyway, so continue. I'm sorry.
I forgot about the
fluffy bunnies.
Oh, yeah. So she gives birth to two fluffy bunnies. And everybody's like, what's going on? And then, like, all of a sudden there's a flash and everybody's gone. And you're like, what is going on? And then there's this little girl. And I caught it this time because it was my second watch.
Right, me too. Yeah.
Anybody who is watching for the first time, did you notice that little girl at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was... Okay. Yeah, okay. I did. That was one of the things I was actually going to mention that I thought they did well, because when she came back at the end, I wasn't, like, so totally shocked. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, I saw her at the beginning. So this kind of ties it back. Like, that's an example of, yeah, you want to kind of set your audience up for that. So I thought that they did pretty well.
So, and this girl says her name. I can't remember what the...
Oh, Samhain.
Samazel?
Samazel, that's it, yeah.
Samazel or something like that. And she explains this little girl, who's acting very little girlish, by the way, like she wants Sam to spin her around. And she explains that she's actually a big demon lord of hell, way, way more powerful than Baphomet. And all the people here who are worshiping Baphomet need to be punished for worshiping him instead of her. And so basically, when Sam finds out that this demon's name is Samazel, she's like, go to the Sams!
Sam's helping Sam's.
The seventh demon's like, what the fuck are you talking about? She's like, no, really. But besides, you have all these other people here. Why take the chance, right? And she's like, whatever. Run.
And I am pretty sure, Chrissy, this is a 3-beat.
Yes, three beat Sam's.
Yeah, the sand, the Code of the Sands was a three beat.
It's definitely a three beat. Yep. Uh-huh.
Now the problem is what I did don't what they missed, right, doing a three beat, because they mentioned it once early on and I don't think they referenced it again, is the whole thing about demons having, you know, rules and rituals and everything, and they're obsessed over these things. Right. So that's why the rule of Sam's works on her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because she needs it's well, there's a rule. We've got to follow the rule.
So then
so I think they could have set that up a little bit better.
So then Samuzel rips the bunny's throat out with her teeth and then continues to slaughter everybody who is there summoning Baphomet. And Sam runs away, hops on her Vespa, which miraculously starts this time, and I think she saved
one of her babies.
She saved the other rabbit. Yeah.
Right. Which is a spawn of Satan.
And is it, though?
But it is named Judy Jr.
Well, Baphomet, not Satan.
I'm confused, though. I'm confused as to whether that's actually the spawn of Baphomet, or because Samuzel came in, she turned the babies into fluffy bunnies just as a prank to piss off Baphomet.
Oh.
Yeah, I was a little confused by how that rolled.
Because I thought they were just bunnies. They didn't seem to be particularly demonic to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. But most babies aren't demonic except to Mike, so...
Well, you know, most babies aren't rabbits either, Phil.
That's true, too. That's true, too. Well, you remember in The Omen, right? The baby was a dog.
Born of a jackal.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. So anyway, that's pretty much the end of the movie. Sam gets away and says she's going to go to Australia.
Well, she actually feels there's a big smile on her face the last scene as she's driving away on the Vesper with the city landscape, whichever city it was, which still bothers me because I'm able to identify it. She gets to head off into the sunset. And I mean, now I'm putting Chrissy on the spot when I ask her this. What does this mean? Because obviously she failed technically to save Judy, but
right.
She does have a somewhat happy ending in a sense. So is there what was she able to overcome her guilt or any of these other things that she was, I guess, fighting? You know, humans fight their own demons every day. Did she win?
Oh, I think she did, because I think what that was supposed to mean, I mean, symbolically, anytime you have a character in a movie, and this is done a lot, and I know you guys have seen it, but anytime you have a character in a movie that's basically like physically driving away from something or driving to something, it's always a symbol of them moving on to the next phase. So even though she couldn't save Judy, but then again, this is one of those things in this type of movie that didn't quite make sense for the story if they were being serious. What epiphany did she really have? She didn't. You know what I mean? They kind of didn't put that in there. They're just like, oh, she went through the shit. Now she gets to go to Australia, which is fine because this is not like a serious movie, so whatever. But in a more serious film, they would have had to have justified that and at least showed how she had redeemed herself because Judy died. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, it's not that everything in the whole world has to be justified. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that her driving away with a sense of peace doesn't actually make sense because they didn't show her having an experience where her lights came on, if that makes any sense. And she went, oh, it wasn't really my fault. that he, even if it was just like, oh, you know, I'm sorry I didn't get to see him, but, you know, maybe it was better because he would have looked terrible and not wanted me to see him that way. You know what I mean? You got to have some kind of realization in order for that epiphany to occur. But it could also just mean that she's okay with whatever she's seen and that life is short and she's just going to move on and not worry about it. It's right. Just, well, there is a beat missing there, though. I will tell you, there is a beat missing, definitely. That was
the whole thing makes sense to me is now that she's been raped by a demon, everything's uphill from here.
There you go. I mean, she did get, and she got her $5 back from the jerk, at least.
True.
Oh, that's what it was. And she got the $5 back. She can use that. Australia now. Yep.
Yeah, she can use that to take advantage of the low, low fares to take a trip to Australia.
Get some change back.
Right, right. Yeah, because, I mean, that's technically her goal is to go to Australia in the memory of her boyfriend that she, in her eyes, which probably is true, let down, in a sense.
Right, right.
But again, you know, we're talking $5 and we have a long way to go before she... I mean, that's the thing about all movies is that even though they survive at the end, it doesn't mean they're going to survive the life in general. Because, again, if they don't have money or education or intelligence or any other thing that can keep them alive in the real world, they become, unfortunately, what we would call behavioral health individuals.
No, you're the only person that calls them that, Phil.
Individuals.
Oh, that's my favorite. Don't take that away from me. I think it's fucking hilarious. I love it. Behavioral health individuals.
Well, he said we. I'm just making it clear it's not we. It's Phil. That's Phil. All.
Right. I'm just being politically correct.
No, you're being psychotic.
Well, I work in the healthcare insurance department, and how many
times does that phrase get tossed around in your office every day? Zero.
Zero. But we do group those who have drug addictions in the behavioral health bucket.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes. All right. So that's the film. Any specific scenes or takeaways or other points that we wanted to bring up? Because even though it is, quote unquote, kind of a happy, somewhat happy ending, unless she still only has $5 and her dreams are still very far away.
The only other thing I would mention is that there's a scene where she gets attacked by a sheet, and that was done pretty well considering she's getting attacked by a sheet.
Oh, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Paranormal Activity 3. You remember the scene when the sheet behind the babysitter? And
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah. And it was really good in that film, and it was really good here, too. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I was thinking of, was it Under the Shadow? The Iranian film from a couple of years ago.
Oh, I never caught that one.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was a terrible film.
Except if I remember correctly, the sheet had flower patterns on it, which was weird.
That kind of ruined the effect. But I didn't really like that film. But it was done well for that film. Yeah, absolutely. Any other items or scenes that we missed that we wanted to discuss? Anything? Anyone? All right, very well. So I guess we can get into some news and house cleaning. Any news or films that anybody wanted to mention that they watched recently? I have one. I saw a film called Tennessee Gothic. I read the review on a website, and so I went to the website for the movie because it's actually being released directly from the Tennessee company that produced and made it. And I ordered it and came in. And so I watched it last week. It's one of my four or five new films of this year that I decided to watch. And it's really good. It's somewhat comedic, but it's also very, very dark. I don't want to really explain what it was, but basically there's this woman who escapes what we see as very bad people that want to do bad things to her. And she escapes and lands up in this farm. A man and his son take her in, And then things begin to happen, and then at the end is a big twist, and it's hard to explain without ruining the twist, so I can't really explain it, but it's a high recommend for me. It's really good. And actually, after seeing it, I went to the Facebook group for the movie itself and told them how much I liked it, and the director immediately friended me, which was kind of cool. And some of the actors and the producer, who's a woman actually, they all like, there's like a chain of like 20 messages just from my post from the filmmakers, thanking me for saying how good the film was. So shout out to them just for that. Never mind for making a damn good film that everybody should check out. Unfortunately, it's fairly difficult to find because I don't know if it's on Amazon or Apple or any of those places yet, because it just recently came out from the festival circuit and they're self-releasing it. So I don't know.
What was the name?
It's called Tennessee Gothic, and it's actually based off of a story by a famous horror author from the 1960s and 70s, who unfortunately I forget the individual's name, but that horror author had like four or five films made out of his prior writings, and he's passed away now. So it comes from a really good source material, if anything.
Yeah,
so,
it doesn't look like it's available on anything right now, Phil.
Yeah,
we have plugged Just Watch It quite a few times, you know, for anybody's looking to find something. Like, for example, if you want to know if The Gallows 2 is playing on streaming, it totally is, and you could find that by looking.
I love
Just Watch,
but I have found that your results will vary. Like this movie we did tonight, Satanic Panic, you can't find it if you try and look it up on Just Watch. So,
yeah, you couldn't, and I found it by going to Flixster. If you go to Flixster.com, it's similar to – not only do they do real movie theaters, but they also do the VOD stuff. And Satanic Panic actually came up on Flixster, even though it didn't come up on Just Watch, which is kind of odd. Yeah.
Did you have anything else, Phil?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say that I may actually reach out to – those folks to see if they would give us a screener, because even though I've already purchased it, I went out and spent the $25 and got the disc and all that. But you know, if the co-host here may want to check it out and think it's worthy to do an episode on, maybe I'll try to get a screener from them. I'll see what I can do. But especially since we can't rent it anywhere. I mean, if you could rent it anywhere, I wouldn't even ask them. But that's all I got, Eric.
All right. I watched a couple things. I may have mentioned one last week, but I don't remember talking about it, so stop me if this is a repeat. I watched a movie called Sweetheart. Did I talk about that?
No, you didn't.
Okay. It's and both of these are going to be single location movies. Sweetheart is basically about a woman who washes up on a desert isle after a boat accident, and is there by herself trying to survive, and then finds out that she shares the island with something that comes at night.
It comes at night. Great film.
So,
ew.
Stop.
That sounds, Eric, that sounds like a movie that's up my alley.
That's what she
said. Is that called?
That's what she said. That's what she said.
Shut up.
Come at night, Eric.
I'm trying to tell you what the title of the movie is, Christy. Okay. It's called Sweetheart.
Okay, Sweetheart.
Yeah.
Is it available for rental, like, all over the place, or?
I believe so. I did it on my usual Apple TV thing. Honestly, I didn't look anywhere else because I already found it.
I looked that up. That sounds awesome.
And then I watched another one called Harpoon, which, again, is basically a single location film with basically three people. There's a dude and his girlfriend and his best friend on a boat. And it's more of a drama. It's not – they categorize it as a horror movie. I don't know if I would. I'm not going to argue with it too much, I guess. But it's very drama-y. I'll just say that. Three people on a boat and stuff happens, and that's all I'm going to say.
That's cool. And that actually sounds interesting to me. oddly more than the other one. Don't ask me why. So maybe I'll check that one out too. And you can find these on VOD anywhere, or are they free?
I rented them both on Apple TV. When I find something, I stop looking. That's so.
Yep, yep. So Apple TV. That's why.
George Carlin's a bit about whenever you lose something, it's always the last place you look. Well, of course it is, because when you find it, you stop looking.
Right. As long as it's not like Circle, where I actually bought it and then I found out I could have got it for free on Netflix.
I'm pretty sure that we are about within the next 30 minutes that Satanic Panic will be hitting Netflix.
Right.
It's definitely a good flick that would make that. There's no doubt about it. A couple things I forgot to mention about Tennessee Gothic, or at least one. You remember that scene, Eric, in that movie Clown, that horror film that we saw a few years ago? The scene where they have the black and white and they have the camera scene and you see the demon.
Okay, yeah.
And that like freaked me out. There's a scene in Tennessee Gothic that's kind of like that, which is awesome.
Cool.
So folks who like those type of things, yeah. Let's see. Anything else? Anybody? News or films or video games or Dungeons and Dragons? Oh, Dungeons and Dragons is having a new character class, by the way.
Actually, if you're joking aside, if we're talking about Dungeons and Dragons for a second, I recommend a show called The Dungeon Run. It is live role-playing game. Yeah, it's a live role-playing show. Each episode usually runs about 3-4 hours.
YouTube podcaster, or is it podcast?
It's actually, you can caffeine.tv is the site that actually produces the show, and you can watch it live on Wednesday nights. And then it's also released on YouTube and as a podcast, so you can get it in any number of ways. And Jeff Cannata, a podcaster I've followed since he was on the Totally Rad Show, is the dungeon master for that show. So if you're into that kind of thing, check it out.
Now, Eric, how do you watch it? Do you watch it live or do you watch it later?
I've actually been listening to it as a podcast most of the time.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And if you do want to watch it live, what time is that?
It's 6 p.m. Pacific time. That would be 9 p.m. Eastern time. And that's at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun.
All right. Very good. Excellent. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Anything? Anyone?
Yeah, I finally managed to get to see Parasite. Tonight.
Yeah, I saw that, Mike. We got to do an episode on it, right?
Well, no, we don't.
We should, though, right?
we could.
Yeah, okay.
I could go either way on it. Depends on whether. I know people are putting this on their best horror films list. I don't understand why, because I don't see how it's a horror film. Okay. It's like a black comedy and a satire. It's got some violence at the end, but not over the top kind of violence that I think you could even justify. You know, some people get stabbed. That's about it.
Both Koreans and Americans do like stabbings in their films. So that's something.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's so I know people I'm seeing like it at the top of their horror film list for the year, and I don't understand it. And this is a podcast that mostly deals with horror stuff. We do deal with dark comedy. It's dark discussions, and it's a dark comedy, so it certainly can fit under the dark discussions umbrella. If it didn't, then we could always cover it under cinema a la carte. I would certainly recommend checking it out. It's directed, if you don't know that, by Bong Joon-ho, who did The Host and Snowpiercer. And was that? No, there's something else he did too, wasn't there? Okja, which was on Netflix,
right,
and
Netflix.
Other was another one he did. So, he's a very talented filmmaker. It's a good film. I'm a little lost on it in terms of what the moral of the story is supposed to be, because there's definitely a class warfare thing kind of going on here, but which you kind of had with also with Snowpiercer.
Mm. Yeah,
but
right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure who you're really supposed to be sympathetic towards in the film, right?
Right. Interesting.
And And that was just maybe the way I'm viewing it. And so maybe I'm missing
some. Sounds like my type of film, though.
Yeah, you would probably enjoy it. Although you might also think everybody's just scumbags and burn it all down.
Which is also good. Yeah, I'm for that.
No, you would complain when everybody's scumbags.
Yeah, well, all right, that's a fair point, yeah. Well, unless there's a Joker character that can burn it all down. Is there a Joker character?
No, there's no Joker character.
Okay, fair enough.
That was a completely different movie. They don't put him in every movie now.
They should,
though. Jesus Christ.
All right. So anyway, it's hard to find. It came out for about 2 weeks in wide release. It's broken box office records for a Korean film, for whatever that's worth. But if you've seen his other films, you certainly will get something out of this one. And I strongly watch it. Some really neat stuff in it. But the less often is the case, the less you know going into it, the better.
Right. Yeah, it's looking like, unfortunately, it's already gone around where I am, so I'm going to have to wait to VOD. My neighbor, two houses down, when I bring my daughter to the bus stop or to wait for her to pick her up, she's right from Korea, and we talk about Korean film and TV all the time, and we're both looking for it to see this big time, but just like me, she unfortunately missed it locally as well because of the unfortunate short run that it had, and she wouldn't even
the
subtitles.
The only way I could squeeze it in, because I've been busy, was to catch a 9:45 showing at a theater that was that's 70 minutes away from me.
Right.
And it's a 2-hour film in AMC, so you add another 25 minutes worth of commercials on top of it.
Right.
So it was getting out at 12:15, and then you had the time to walk out of the mall to my car, drive home. I was getting home about 10 to 2 and getting up in the morning at 6.
Yeah, I'm probably going to wait for VOD on that one.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But it became a quest. I had been foiled in numerous attempts to try to watch it. Which is what happened to me earlier this year with the movie you mentioned earlier, Ready or Not, and it became a thing like I must catch it, you know, I must find it.
Right. What was the film that you missed because of, and you had to see the Rocky Horror Picture Show again? There was another one that you had problems.
That was the one we did.
Lighthouse.
The Fots. The Fots. The movie.
The Fots!
For those who missed it, that was referring to The Lighthouse, a deeply intellectual film starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Right. Willem Dafoe is naked in The Lighthouse, and Pattinson's fighting a one-eyed seagull. What a very intellectual film.
That's what they're calling
it. And the entire place is full of the smell of farts.
No, not farts.
Not farts, Christy. Fats! Oh, God, the fats!
I think the reason we disliked that film was because we went in wrong. We were thinking it was actually supposed to be serious, and it was actually a comedy.
That explains it all.
If we win,
I mean, it's possible. A lot of people are loving it, and I am not faulting. Look, I think we praised the hell out of a film considering we didn't like it.
That's true. It was really, really well done, and the Fots line gives it a half a point anyway.
Right. It just fundamentally, does the film connect with you emotionally or not, and it just didn't. Whereas Satanic Panic did.
Right. And back to The Lighthouse, they were very realistic because they did have the New England accent. The Fots! The Fots!
Oh, God, the Fots!
That's awesome. Anyway, Parasite, you know, when it comes to VOD, you know, we'll check it out and maybe we'll do an episode. Who knows? What else? Anything else anybody's seen? Chrissy, what about yourself? Have you been able to see anything recently?
No, not really. I've been super busy with a couple of short stories I was trying to finish up.
Pages. I see you posting every day. I got another story.
Oh my God. I don't know where it's coming from, but you know what? I'm writing it until it dies because inevitably this streak will continue for however long it's going to streak go for, and then there'll be like 3 years where I can barely do anything. So I'm just going to keep going until it stops. But unfortunately,
what does the internet do? And then what does the internet do for you today, Christy? They drop a story about the they found the fossil remains of a child wearing a helmet made of the skull of other children.
I know, motherfucker. Because guess
skull
what?
Skull of a what?
Yeah, they found. Archaeologists found fossil remains where there are children, right, baby skeletons, wearing skulls of older juvenile children to protect their heads.
Man, people are fucking nuts, mm-hmm. dude. And I thought they were bad now.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, I of course saw that, and now I've got my brain is going. So anyway, I did, however, see a non-horror film that I really loved. I went and saw The Last Christmas Movie. And I'm only going to say this one thing because it's not horror related, but I think anybody that's toying with the idea of seeing this, because let's face it, we don't all live on a strict diet of horror. It is not the romantic comedy that they market it as. It is not a chick flick. It actually is pretty dark. It's pretty freaking sad, so bring your tissues. Mm. And it really examines things like family and death and second chances. So, you know, and as far as the critics who are saying that it sucks, I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't bother reading that. The story is very tight. It's very well done. Everything is justified. There is a giant freaking twist. So do not read any spoilers if you're going to see it, because you're totally going to wreck it. But I think it's a very well done film. It does have, I can't say anything else about it. That's it.
Cool. I just think maybe you don't name your film after like one of the most reviled Christmas songs ever written.
Well, no, actually what's interesting about that is that George Michael, Emma Thompson wrote the script, and the script is excellent. But George Michael, before he died, had gone, because they were friends, I guess, and she had shown it to him and said, what do you think of this? And I guess that was never the original name of it. It was called something else. And George Michael added a few plot lines and made some suggestions, and it turns out that the title of the film is actually multi-layer. Like it's actually works on a literal and metaphorical level. It's a totally different, it's not, that's what I mean. They marketed it as like this silly rom-com, and I think people went expecting that, and when they didn't get that, they
got
out
devastated. Yes! I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, I went, we were bawling. I mean, and I was not prepared that it was going to be that sad. So we have one tissue between us, one, and we're sharing it. And I was like, I mean, it was that bad because my friend was
crying.
That's
the most disturbing thing I've heard on this podcast in a while.
Yeah. I guess we really love each other because we just were like, we're just going to have to share this one freaking napkin from the popcorn. we're fucked.
I did. I forgot one thing I've been watching. We've talked a little bit about Apple TV Plus. And I said I wasn't really interested in doing it until I found out what the quality was going to be like. Well, Apple is giving a year of it for free to anybody who buys a new Apple product, or at least certain Apple products, a phone, an iPad, or a computer. And I thought that was starting after the service launch, but apparently the phone I bought in September was eligible for that, so I have a year of it for free. So I'm checking it out, and I just got done watching five episodes of a series called For All Mankind, which is an alternative timeline series, kind of like Man in the High Castle. Starts with the premise of what if the Axis has won World War II. This series starts with the premise of what if the Soviet Union had put a man on the moon first. And goes from there as to what might have happened. And it's mostly a drama, but it's also like astronaut stuff. So if you're into that kind of thing and you have like Apple TV Plus for free for your trial or whatever, it's worth checking out.
Is Stanley Kubrick in?
No, Stanley Kubrick.
What if Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing for the Soviets instead of faking?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You guys are horrible.
Oh no, it wouldn't be Kubrick. It would be the guy that did Solaris.
Okay.
Well, no, but they prove that there are references all throughout Kubrick's The Shining to his conspiracy of putting the man on the moon.
That's what they're referring to, Chris.
Yes, yeah.
Right. So the 1972 film Solaris by Andrei Tarkovsky. So that's okay. That's what have faked the moon landing for the Russians. That's right.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. Speaking of Apple Plus, yeah, we have it too. We actually paid for it, and I haven't really watched anything yet. It was more for the chance to watch stuff when I had time. But my wife's been watching some stuff on it, and yeah, she's enjoying the Steve Carell, Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, the morning show. I watched that too. That's good. I just didn't mention it here because it's not really subject matter related to this show. Whereas For All Mankind is a little sci-fi, so I thought I'd throw it out there.
Have you watched the one with Jason Momoa on it?
Nope.
No, I haven't checked that one out either. I got to check that out.
For some reason, I'm just not interested in it. I don't know why.
Gotcha. Yeah. I may just give it a shot. I did finally see the Boys. I've been a fan of that comic book for some time. The Boys, the TV show. It's friggin' awesome. We should do an episode.
Honestly, that's more disturbing than a lot of horror movies I've seen.
Yeah, it's got some good stuff. Kyle Urban is awesome. He's the best. He's the man. The man. True anti-hero. Burn it all down. but I would do an episode on the Boys if anybody was interested. Eric, the woman that I was talking about in the comic book where Billy Butcher bangs all the time is actually the Jennifer Esposito character. But in this, they changed it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's her character. She has a relationship in the comic book, but they don't have it here for some reason.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a really good show. It's a high recommend. The comic book is definitely a high recommend as well. And they do it justice. The casting is pretty solid. The only casting that doesn't relate to the comic book, in my opinion, is probably Huey, because in the comic book he's a Scottish guy, but here they make him American and whatnot. But the actor that plays him, who actually happens to be Meg Ryan and Patrick Swayze's Randy.
You're just spouting random words, man. I have no idea what you're trying to say.
The guy that plays Huey is the son of Meg Ryan and that actor that's pretty famous. What the hell's his name?
Oh, that one.
Randy Quaid's brother.
Dennis Quaid?
Dennis, thank you. Dennis Quaid. He's the guy that plays Huey. So they replace the Scottish guy in the comic book with Meg Ryan and Quaid's son. And he does actually a pretty good job, even though he's not Scottish in the TV show. But I highly recommend. I would do an episode if Mike and Eric are interested.
I'm not publicly committing to anything.
I know. We can talk about it off. But either way, it's a high recommend, and everybody should check it out if you have Amazon Prime, because if you do, you can watch it at any time. Mike, you saw it, right?
Yeah.
And you like it?
Yeah.
All right, very good. Any other information anybody want to give up? Anything? All right, so I guess we can do some house cleaning. So first off, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast. It's called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric have a new podcast that's actually coming out next week because...
Are you sure? It's been 2 months. Are you sure it's coming out next week?
Yes.
It's been 2 months of it's coming out next week.
I took that's true, Mike. But I took off next week completely, so I'll have plenty of time to actually pluck it out there. And we're actually recording an episode next week, I think. What is it, Monday or Tuesday? I forget which day.
What is it? The 25th, whatever that is.
Monday.
Monday, okay, so 25th. But what's this podcast that we're doing, Mike? The spinoff, I guess?
It doesn't exist. It's fiction. It's a delusion in your own mind.
I've had dreams about recording episodes of it, but they never show up.
And what is it called, Mike? Just pretend.
It's a presumably monthly podcast that may or may not be discussing films that we may or may not be discussing on Dark Discussions. The first two episodes that we may or may not have discussed would have been the Christian Bale Western Hostiles and the Edgar Wright film Baby Driver.
And we're recording a third one this Monday, as Eric mentioned.
Maybe or maybe not.
Yeah, we should. No problems. Shouldn't be an issue. So that's called Cinema a la Carte, and Stop Looking for It. Let's see. Chrissy, you have a couple of things. One, you had a book that came out in April, and then in January, you have a thing coming out as well?
I do. I had a book that came out in April. It is called The Shadows Behind. It is a collection of psychologically disturbing short stories. And it's gotten some pretty good reviews from places like the Horror Fiction Review and Hell Notes. In addition, I do have a magazine that is going to be released in April, but I am taking submissions for that in January if you're writers. It is called 34 Orchard, and you can find out more about that at 34, the number 34, orchard.com. And today, one of my flash pieces called Last Christmas, ha ha ha, Eric, you'll laugh about that, is actually posted on Crystal Lake Publishing's Patreon because I made the story made the final cut.
Very cool.
Yes, I'm very, very excited about that. So, yeah, so that's what's happening.
All right, very good. Let's give our final thoughts about this film. So let's start with you, Eric. Satanic Panic. What's your final thoughts there?
My final thoughts on this film is I'm too tired. I've lost the ability to speak. Let me try that one again. My final thoughts on Satanic Panic are that it's an enjoyable horror comedy. It's not a masterpiece, but I think it's a good time. So it's worth a rental.
All right, very good. Mike.
Yeah, given that it's a low budget film with a first time director, we've seen a lot of low budget films. They're much rougher than this. This is an enjoyable surprise. It has got a wickedly dark sense of humor that I enjoyed. I think it's a little rough and starting it off, but stick with it, and I think it gets better. And like I said, I really particularly enjoyed the performances of the cult members.
All right, very good. This was a pleasant surprise. I highly recommend it and enjoyed it immensely. It's fun. It's a great Halloween type film or film that, you know, if you want to see a horror film with a bunch of friends, this is a great film because it's a true throwback midnight movie drive-in film from days gone by. And it is solid cast, some good lines, and fairly entertaining. So I recommend for me. Chrissy.
Yeah, I really had fun with this film. I think the script in terms of the dialogue is really pretty hilarious, and there are some absolutely very funny moments. I do think that although it is supposed to be a comedy, I think there are some kind of weak points in the storytelling, but you know, and I do agree with what everybody else said. It does look very low budget. But if you just want to have some fun and do some camp, then it's a lot of fun. I particularly was a little bit bored with it halfway through just because it just really didn't hold my interest. And I think it was because it was just lacking intention for me. But that certainly doesn't mean it's a terrible film. I think if you like camp and you like to have a little bit of fun, and particularly if you like black comedy, and if you really don't give a crap if the story totally works or not, then yeah, totally go for it. Have a good time. It's worth the $4 to rent.
All right, very well. So that's 2019 Satanic Panic. Don't mistake it for a few other films with the same title. Not necessarily that those films are bad, but we're not talking about them. We're talking about the 2019 film. It's getting fairly good reviews, a lot of buzz on Facebook and various other social media places, and seems like most people are liking it. So probably worth checking out. VOD everywhere and also on disc and both DVD and Blu-ray. So well, I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Satanic Panic. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.